whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Welcome to the Detroit Football Network podcast, where we are debuting a quad box. And it's funny because probably nobody's going to watch us on video, so it's a quad box for
well, us. Well, it's past the witching hour, so we should be in the quad box.
We got all four of us here today. I'm Justin Rogers, joined by Zach Clark, Stoney, and Will Birchfield. We're all here for a bye week party.
No place I'd rather be, boys. I mean, truly, on a bye week when I could, you know, be lounging, maybe watching a little football, having a beer, I would much rather be here with you guys podcasting with no plan in place, just ready to rock and roll.
No. I mean, I'm sure all the guys are on vacation, right? All the rest of the dudes on the team, right? We should be there wherever they are.
Right.
Where do you go as a football player on a three-day weekend? Like, you can't get far. The Poconos?
Yeah, I thought about this. Because you're right, you can't get too far. But like with private jets and whatnot, I mean, you can do some damage pretty quickly down to Florida or somewhere just south of that. I thought about this.
See, I have TikTok, and I follow. Well, I don't follow them, but the Amalfi Jets thing constantly pops up. And
Colin.
Private jets are not cheap. I don't know how many guys on the roster can afford that $38,000 round trip to Oklahoma.
Well, but
the last time players went down south before a playoff game was when Victor Cruz, Odell Beckham, and ended up on a boat with, was it Trey Songz, and then proceeded to lose to the Packers at Lambeau. And I don't think any player has gone anywhere since for fear of repeating their crime.
But with the money some of these guys make, if it's, you know, two or three, especially if they're single guys, two or three guys splitting it, go to the Atlantis or one of those places, the Bahamas for 3 days. It's nothing.
So yeah, at that point, just fly someone up.
3 hour flight.
Who? Which player is most likely to post on Instagram the Bahamas trip, and why is it Terrion Arnold?
I was about to say it's Terrion
because he posts things about buying coats and not having coats, and that's far less exciting than being somewhere cool on vacation. Right?
I hope when he goes on vacation, he still does his tropical shopping at Old Navy, though. That would bring me a lot of joy after he got his winter coat from there.
Well, it's a nice winter coat.
Old Navy's on the up, though, from what I've been told.
J-Mo would be in the mean streets of Nassau in the Bahamas, just trying to hang out with the people.
He is a man of the people. So, look, the bye week is great. It offers the Lions a chance to recharge, to rest and recuperate whatever injuries they may have lingering. I don't know. We probably all saw the Alex Anzalone interview on the St. Brown Brothers podcast, and if you didn't, you should, because it's great. But you know, some guys definitely could use the extra time a little bit more than others, but probably the two people benefiting the most from this time off this week, Ben Johnson, Aaron Glenn, instead of having to cram in 9 combined interviews, I believe they have while prepping for an opponent, they have the luxury of a weekend off to knock out those 3 hour virtual interviews as they pursue the head coaching opportunities. And look, there's a really good chance that one or both of them gets a job somewhere else. And I'm curious if you guys have a spot in mind for each of them that you think is the best fit.
Well,
yeah, I'll go back to the prediction I made for Aaron Glenn about 2 months ago right here on this podcast, and that was that he's destined for New Orleans, and I don't think it plays out any differently now. In fact, I'd be very surprised if Aaron Glenn is back next season here, and I'd be very surprised if he's not in New Orleans instead, where he has obviously deep connections to ownership. He coached there for 5 years. He's very well-regarded by the Saints, and he was interviewed by the Saints in their last head coaching hiring cycle when they went with then DC, Dennis Allen. Dennis Allen's now out. And Aaron Glenn, to me, it was kind of put on this earth, certainly to be a three-time Pro Bowl corner, but maybe even more than that, to be the head coach of an NFL team. I mean, he is cut from the same leadership cloth in a lot of ways as Dan Campbell. And for as much of a strategic mastermind Ben Johnson might be, when it comes to rallying a locker room, and on top of that, putting the right plan in place every single week, Aaron Glenn just seems to check every box you'd be looking for in a head coach. And it's exactly why Dan Campbell came out pretty much unprompted this week and said, look, if we go through a third hiring cycle and Aaron Glenn isn't someone's head coach next season, it's ridiculous. I mean, this guy has, I think, what everyone is or at least should be looking for in a future head coach. I'd be very surprised if he's not the Saints head man next season.
I agree with you, but the other team to look out for, because I don't think they're getting Vrabel because the Patriots are, is the Jets. He played there. I think Aaron Glenn is one of the few guys who wouldn't give a rat's ass about the New York media. You know, Ben Johnson probably wouldn't care either, but I just don't see the fit of Ben Johnson in New York. Aaron Glenn, I think, because he's played there, he could do it as well. But I agree with you. It's going to be New Orleans. The thing that fascinates me the most is – the whole Hank Fraley thing, you know, interviewing for the OC of Seattle. Now, does Hank Fraley wait to see if Ben Johnson gets a head coaching job? Because you would maybe think that if Ben Johnson gets a head coaching job, well, then Hank Fraley's your OC.
I feel like they're kind of grooming Tanner Engstrand for that job. And J-Rodge, I don't know how you feel about this, but to me, the next OC, if it's internal, is Engstrand. It seems like he's followed the same arc, the same progression as a coach in Detroit that Ben Johnson did before assuming the role of OC. It feels like he's next in line as far as someone who's been like in the incubator and groomed for that role.
I think it's probably either Engstrand or Montgomery. I've really struggled to separate those two. Mm-hmm. They bring different things to the table. I think Montgomery certainly falls in that Glenn line, right? Like the master motivator. You know, I don't know his play calling acumen. I don't know if he would assume that role or if Campbell would have a bigger role in it. Same for Engstrand, really. I mean, he's done it, but he's done it at weird levels like the XFL and low level college. So, you know, I could see either one of those guys. I do wonder at some level if, you know, Fraley taking an OC job interview maybe hints that he's not Ben Johnson's guy. I mean, as weird as that sounds, like I know a lot of people have assumed that, but you know, he would, I think, know very well whether Johnson had intention of taking a job this offseason and whether he was a planned part of the staff. Those conversations would happen. So I do wonder at some level if we can read between the tea leaves there. I do really quickly want to go back to Glenn, though, on the two positions. One, New York, they need culture. They
over
need
Rex
somebody
Ray's
to
dead body.
I look
loaded at, I want, dead body with veneers.
I want all the Rex Ryans we could have in the NFL. But
sexy Rexy, baby, let's go.
You know, I think that it is important that they get somebody to take back over that team because it does feel like it's slipped into Aaron Rodgers' hands and it's been a disaster. The Saints is interesting because that franchise needs a reboot. I mean, in the worst way, financially, more than anything, their cap situation continues to be hellacious. They're $66 million over the projected cap today. They just need to completely reset that. And I think that if you take that job and Mika Loomis stays as their GM and you know, Gail Benson's their owner, I do think there would be an understanding of patience there to tear it down to the studs and rebuild in the same way that the Lions did. And so I do think that's a really good fit on multiple different levels.
Yeah, but it's just that's the worst opening, right?
No doubt.
Mm-hmm. And so I right feel now. For right.
The Raiders is not really good either, I don't think.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money they have, though.
And they have this guy, you may have heard of him, Tom Brady, big winner. And I think they have a bigger voice than Mr. Haircut in Vegas. You may be right, though. I mean, if you want to fight to the bottom on which one's more garbage, we can do that later. They're both, But I will say this though. I feel for Aaron Glenn, he's waited so long and he's probably going to get the worst one out there. And Ben Johnson, you know, much younger. And to me, as Tony, you said it earlier with the Patriots, we were talking about Ben Johnson. I think the Patriots and
I like Vrabel.
I know, but if we're talking, you didn't ask who the Patriots were going to pick. Justin asked who the best job is for Ben Johnson.
Oh, right. Okay.
And so we're talking about a guy.
Put Drake May there.
Right. Yeah. And so to me, you have to look at the quarterback situation. Jets, terrible.
Raiders. Terrible. Raiders is terrible.
Yeah. And I'm suspect on the Bears. I have no faith in Caleb Williams. I think he is bizarre beyond belief, which is okay. But I'm not sure if it fits. And I will say, you know, if we're talking about quarterbacks, Jacksonville's got a good one too, but that's a weird situation.
Yeah.
It's weird, especially after that press conference the other day where, well, if somebody had an idea to fire the GM, I'd listen. I
loved it.
I'll step with his mustache. I'll step back. No, thank you. That was insane. That was insane. They sit right next to him. Are you nuts?
Why would anybody want that job where you're going to have your owner wants to have two home games in London? Yeah. I mean, I know Trevor Lawrence is kind of an enigma and he's still a huge upside, but I don't see Ben Johnson there either.
No, that job sucks. I don't like that one either.
Man, I feel like you guys have been hurt. Tony's been hurt by the Raiders at some point in his life, and I don't know what it is.
Zach Clark taking the Jags job. He's made that very clear.
Good teams don't fire coaches. Teams in good situations don't get rid of coaches. None of these coaches retired. None of them. They were all let go, and for good reason. And some of it was on the coaching themselves. Eberflus can't count. That's a problem. Jared Mayo wasn't ready. Doug Peterson is, you know, himself. Robert Saleh, you know, I think about Robert Saleh a lot because in the last cycle, people were a little chippy that he didn't make it back here.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
the guy. Well, if Aaron Glenn leaves, he could come as a DC. If he doesn't go back to San Francisco, who the hell knows?
I did see he interviewed there today. That's interesting. It's interesting because I feel like Ben Johnson does fit the Jacksonville job pretty well. And you're right. Like it's an interesting situation from a fan base perspective. Like they're not invested, which is leading to these international games, which is annoying. Does the no state income tax offset that? Yeah, probably for me, but.
They're going to redo their whole stadium. Who are they going to be playing for the next, you know, whenever that starts for 2 years?
Go to Tampa Bay in the open air stadium where the Rays used to play.
They're going to play at the Lakeland Tigers.
The Yankees training site with the Rays.
They're going to play the Swamp in Gainesville. Is that where they're going to play? I don't even know.
But from a personnel standpoint, and certainly offensively, right? They've got a quarterback, as you mentioned, with upside. I think he's much better than he's been thus far. They've got a dual-headed backfield of Bigsby and Etienne. They've got one of the young blossoming receivers that very well could end up being a second-team All-Pro in
Brian Thomas.
And then some offensive line pieces too. And they've got the number 5 pick in the draft, not needing a quarterback. And so I do think there's a chance for a rapid turnaround there. I do think Ben will do better in a market where there's not a highly critical media. It's just an observation I think he'll do well with. Jacksonville might have the least critical media in the NFL. And so I could see him turning that program into a winner fairly quickly with the right defensive coordinator along with him.
There's a but, though, and Jim Harbaugh can tell you what that but is. It's two words. It's Trent Baalke. The fact that he's still there, why would Ben Johnson or anybody want to work for that dude?
What if Ben Johnson says, hey, I've got a better idea, Shad Khan, he'd fire Trent Baalke. He said it.
I mean, that could be an interview contingency, right? Like, I'm not coming here unless you let me bring my own guy. And, you know, I don't know if Ben's got somebody in mind. I think there's a real interesting possibility that Lance Newmark, the former Lions high-end personnel executive who's now the assistant GM in Washington, could be the right guy for him. I mean, he had a good hand in this roster construction through, certainly the first 3 years. And so I could see Newmark and Ben Johnson pairing up somewhere and being pretty formidable pretty quickly.
Do we think the Bears is the most stable job?
No. No. Kevin Warren? No. Like, that leadership's also kind of quirky. Like, it's kind of got a Game of Thrones element to it. And Will and I, we love Game of Thrones references on this podcast. I mean, there's some Littlefinger action going on over there.
Yeah, when I look at coach replacement, and I look at the Bears that have done it once in season, and that was this past year. I just, you know, I look at teams, I'm not comparing them straight up, but like the Steelers, right? Those are the teams that succeed. Those that are always flipping their coach every 2 or 3 years. The Lions have sucked forever. Why? Let's go down the list of coaches they've had. They've all been terrible. And so I just, you know, I wonder with the Bears, maybe if there's a little more patience there. I know what you're saying, though, when it comes to I didn't watch Game of Thrones, but I understand the reference.
Well, I mean, since
might have the hottest seat in the NFL among coaches who aren't being cast as losers. Like, if they lose their playoff game on Saturday, they haven't won a playoff game in 8 years. And that fan base is getting very restless with Mike Tomlin, despite all of their solid seasons over the past decade.
But he would immediately become the hottest coach in the market, right?
Yeah, unless Belichick backs out of that UNC job. sounds like Brady's making some overtures already. I want to go back to Glenn quickly. Yes, to us, that Saints job might be the worst job available, but it doesn't matter how we view it. We have to think through Aaron Glenn's lens, and he has a different psychology than the rest of us. Like, where we might see a challenge, I guarantee you he sees an opportunity. And where we might see obstacles, he sees hurdles to overcome and people to prove wrong. And I do think that he has part of his heart still in New Orleans. Like, anytime Dan Campbell and Aaron Glenn talk about their time with the Saints, they do it in really glowing language. Like, you can tell they still have like an emotional connection to that city and to that franchise. And I think Aaron Glenn would love nothing more than going there and spending however long it took to resurrect the Saints, because to me that still is, despite maybe a 3 to 4 year lull here, one of the prouder franchises over the past three decades. Is that fair to say?
Well, since Sean Payton took over.
Sure, that's a team that we view as a winner. And I think that's how Aaron Glenn views it and Dan Campbell views it. And I really believe that Aaron Glenn would relish the opportunity to go there and restore the Saints to the team that he knew them to be. So yeah, it might on surface look like a crappy job. I think he sees that as an awesome chance to prove who he is and prove who that franchise is and can be again.
The other team, I'm not saying it's going to happen because you never know, is if McCarthy decides he doesn't want to go back, or Jerry decides, you know, we don't want him. Aaron Glenn, I believe, played a little bit for Dallas at one point too. He went to Texas A&M. Maybe he says, you know, what the hell? You know, I can deal through anything.
Yeah.
You know, so that might be a name to consider.
Stick around. More of the Detroit Football Network podcast continues after this.
I will also say that I have an emotional connection to New Orleans, and I've spent maybe 20 days of my life there. But that place is it's my favorite NFL city, and really my favorite city in the U.S. That'll be the best part about going to the Super Bowl is just all the delicious gumbo food I would eat. Yeah, for sure. Did you see who Glenn picked up an endorsement from this week, by the way?
No.
One, Drew Brees, and I feel like that that might be the rubber stamp that seals that deal.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And look, Drew Brees and Sean Payton navigated him through Katrina. I'm not saying the situation that happened, you know, the day 2 days before the Sugar Bowl is even analogous to Katrina, but you know, Aaron Glenn knows about that city fighting through some crap. So, you know,
I mean, the very first press conference he gave after that, he began with a statement and like sincere concern for, again, the people of that city. I think his heart is partly drawn home in some ways to New Orleans.
And I do think on that note, the draw of the city back and forth between a person like that buys in that hard, like it is here, is reciprocated and then some from the city itself, and those kinds of fits, I think you don't get that in Jacksonville, for example, or New York, but certainly in a place like New Orleans, if you can match their intensity, enthusiasm, and who they are as people, I mean, we've seen Dan Campbell, I mean, they're going to name a street after him, for God's sake. That's going to happen.
It is. Oh yeah.
There's zero chance. I don't care if they win the Super Bowl or not. It's going to happen, and it's been 4 years.
Yeah.
And so again, I think Aaron Glenn is seeking that out, and Justin made that point earlier when it comes to culture. But with the Jets, though, I don't think anybody notices, and that's the problem. Yeah.
Well,
what's the street in Royal Oak they're renaming, by the way?
Campbell.
Oh, so the street I live on, essentially.
Yeah. Yes. No, but Dan Campbell will be in your head every day of your life, Justin. However,
generally.
Yes. The other name to talk about here was the Chris Spielman thing. Speaking of
really interesting.
The fact that what his brother and Mike Tenenbaum are part of this company, what Team 33 that looks for jobs and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Chris Spielman seems like the anti-New York person, but I don't think he really cares one way or the other. And if he wants to be a GM, there you're talking about, I don't know, other people leaving too. And you know, you can sit there and you know, obviously Holmes and Campbell get tons of credit as they should. You know, how much impact does Chris Spielman have on turning this whole franchise around too?
So much.
Well, I mean, I think a ton of what he did was on the business side, not the right part, but like culturally, he laid a foundation,
mm-hmm.
right? He executed what I would call Sheila's vision, right? Like the Patriots people that were here, we're just going to call them the Patriots people. they built hills on the outside on the practice facility. They built walls on the inside, literal hills and figurative walls.
Yeah.
And, you know, within that building, like everything was divided. And, you know, I had a player tell me in an interview shortly after they left, like he was afraid. He was walking on eggshells through the building, wondering if he was even allowed to say hello to a staffer he walked by, because that's the culture of fear that they put in. And so all these departments were fractured and separated. And the big thing for Sheila was unifying the building again and you know, getting everybody rowing in the same direction and feeling like they're part of a team. And so Spielman's kind of spearheaded that. And obviously he's had his hands, you know, dabbling in all kinds of football stuff from coaching to personnel to draft, but like, you know, just a fraction of a decision maker, a trusted extra voice in that process. And I go back and I just think of like the quotes he had through his tenure, right? Like he came on to the first press conference when he got hired in 2020, late in the year, and said, "Hey, I'm not qualified to be a GM. I don't want to be a GM." I talked to him in 2023 for an exclusive, and he said, "You know, all these people think all these people outside the building think I want all these different jobs, and I'm you know, working my way toward them." He goes, "I have to remind people in the building all the time, I love the job I have. I've created this role. I don't want any of their jobs." But we all grow in our aspirations at some point. And the idea that he wants to be a GM, not necessarily here, he doesn't want to replace Brad Holmes. He would maybe like his own team. That's believable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd think he'd want to see it through to a Super Bowl before making that decision. But, you know, he's going to get a ring regardless if he takes that job.
Yeah. And, you know, Stoney, you said he seems like the most anti-New York person ever. Isn't that exactly what the Jets need?
Yes.
Like, that organization has had so much, for lack of a better term, bullshit. Like, it doesn't seem like anyone there is just focused on building a football team. And that's how you end up with a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, who now is almost dictating where they go next and who they hire next. And that has been a complete sham. And it just feels like, for honestly, maybe since like the semi Mark Sanchez, Rex Ryan running contention, that they've just been making headlines without winning games. And Chris Spielman only cares about winning and doesn't care about anything else that comes with football, all the accessories, all of the different avenues of life you can access. He just wants to build a football team. And I think for that reason, he would actually be a perfect tonic for that franchise that has fallen on really, really disturbing times.
The problem is, and I assume he does have the disposition to tell the owner, Woody's kids, to get out with his Madden rating. There were Madden ratings on players, at least.
Hey, that's why he actually got the job, is they found Madden 94, and Spielman's rating is phenomenal, so they brought him in.
Yeah, they saw a video when he you know, knocked out the late but great Don Shane in a Dear Don episode years ago. Remember that?
Don Shane, I do remember that. Mm-hmm. I do remember that. And you're talking earlier about a culture change.
Will has no idea what the hell we're talking
about. Yeah. Clueless.
YouTube Don Shane Chris Spielman.
Okay.
Yeah.
It would be like Dan Miller going head to head one on one in a tackling drill with Chris Spielman. Shane was Dan Miller for Channel 7 for years.
Right. Hi. Yeah, Dan Miller would be
walking. Dare Don.
Chris Spielman. He did this thing called Dare Don, where he was dared to do different things and people.
Yeah.
So he did this thing with Spielman. He thought it was gonna, the pads are mic'd. He thought it was gonna be, and Spielman just laid.
Spielman
so
killed him.
And Don Shane basically is like the same height as Mitch Albom. Okay, so
yeah. Only knows one speed, Chris Spielman. If he does leave, they're gonna have to find someone else to fill in little divots though around the practice field. Chris Spielman became very adept with a little bucket of seed and a little shovel during practices, going around and filling in the divots left behind by players' cleats. So I assume someone in the building can fulfill that role. But yeah, he really has been a valuable resource. And I remember reading the piece you wrote, J-Raj, about him, was it last year? And it just shined a good light on all of the different roles that he holds in that building, and all of them together kind of coalesce into his like unnamed job as special assistant. But like, even for coaches, he's been a great resource. He'll stand out at practice, I think you said, and he will view the offense from the perspective of a linebacker. And then he'll tell Ben Johnson afterwards, hey, these plays gave me issues. This is a play worth running because I had trouble deciphering it. Or on the flip side, hey, I saw right through this. You might want to rethink this. So he has a really sharp football mind. And I think he has, on top of that, again, the one track mind that an organization like the Jets could really benefit from.
All right. So the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air meme where Will walks into the house and it's completely empty and he's just looking around where everybody saw that today with all the Lions interviews, because we got Deshae Townsend interviewing for a DC job. We got Hank Fraley interviewing for OC. Like, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how many coaches and front office people the Lions lose, because that's what happens when you're successful. Yeah. They lose. Let me finish or wrap this segment up before we move on to...
I do want to ask you one more question. We talked about who would take Ben Johnson's place. Who do you think would take Aaron Glenn's place? Would it be Shepard, or would it be external, you think?
I think Shepard's the front runner. And obviously, external is a much larger conversation to look at the different options that are out there. But I think you start with the internal, because that's how this Lions team operates. It's roster and its coaching staff and its front office. They look to promote internally because they've developed those people.
Yeah.
Plus, Kelvin Shepard's the man.
Yeah, he is. He's a dog.
So I'm gonna close this by tell me if one or both will be gone. Each of you. Zach, Glennon Johnson. What do you think?
One.
Which one?
Oh, I mean, we've talked about this 1,000 times. Aaron Glenn covets being a head coach. Yeah. Ben Johnson, he's kind of hard to read. I don't know what he likes. But you can do that in a lot of places. And maybe he doesn't want the responsibility of leading a team. You can tell that Aaron Glenn wants to be a leader of a room.
Yeah. Like
the whole room, the biggest room. There is no room. And so I think for that reason, and he's interviewed several times. Ben Johnson, though, there are scenarios in my head where he stays. Not many of them, but I'm going to say one.
Yeah.
Stoney?
I'm almost going to agree with Zach, but I'll say definitely Glenn, no doubt. If the Lions don't win the Super Bowl, I think Johnson stays.
Like,
if they do win the Super Bowl, I think he's gone.
Agreed.
Stoney, that was exactly my thought. So I'll just echo it. I was going to say one with a caveat, the caveat being if they win the Super Bowl, then Johnson is gone too. I don't think at that point he would really have any reason to come back other than just feeling very uncomfortable with all the jobs potentially offered to him. But I think it was easy for him to slide back here last year and the year before because he did legitimately have unfinished business. I think he would feel like it was maybe time to go too if and when they win it all this year. So I'll say one, Glenn, and likely two if they win it.
All right, we're all collectively shipping Aaron Glenn to New Orleans, and good for him.
What are you saying?
I really like what you're saying here about the Super Bowl Ben Johnson's decision. Yeah. It'd be interesting to see what teams are willing to wait to make that decision, or wait for him to make that decision. But I do want to point out, since we've got Stoney here assigning Vrabel to New England, which totally understandable, Vegas fired their coach and their GM. And they got Tom Brady there, and he wants Vrabel too. So there's I think there's competition for Vrabel. You talk about a culture setting guy. I could see Chicago really being interested in that as well. But kind of root for Pete Carroll at Chicago, to be honest.
I don't see Vrabel going to Chicago. The other name to think about for the Raiders, I was reading about the today, is for the GM position. Now Telesco is gone. I swear I never even heard of this guy. He's like the assistant GM, I think, in Tampa, but it said that he was a teammate of Brady's in Michigan, and I never heard of the guy.
Larry Foote?
Larry Foote could be the DC.
Yeah, no, Larry Foote's a guy.
John Steinbeck or something like that?
Never heard of him either.
Me neither, and he played. He was his teammate in Michigan. I bet you he didn't play one. He was probably a special teamer. Either that or he basically watched Jansen's jock.
Wow. He had no idea.
Stoney comes in hyping this guy up and then downgrades him to a jock washer.
You know why? Because he's going to the Raiders.
That was an incredible ride.
All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the wild card weekend ahead and what it means for potential division round matchups for the Detroit Lions. This is the Detroit Football Network podcast. All right, we're back at the Detroit Football Network podcast. I'm Justin Rogers, joined by everyone. We got Zach Clark, Stoney, and Will. We got Quad Box on the video. I don't know who's seeing that. Doesn't matter. We're seeing it. It's awesome. I've seen half my face for this entire thing with these cryons or skyons or whatever they're called. I'm not a TV person.
Chiron.
You're all
cryons.
Right. Chiron.
C-H-C-H-Y-R-O-N. This
room needs
off the rails.
I mean, we need Aaron Glenn to come in.
And I just realized that Will's broadcasting live from a bed.
You didn't notice?
just now noticed the pillow and the headboard. So, sexiest podcast out there.
It's a cool one.
Wild card weekend. We don't have to do anything. It's great.
Yeah.
There are three matchups, all have kind of in order potential implications for the Lions. Starts with Commanders and Bucks, 4:30 on Sunday, peels into the night game, Green Bay and Philadelphia. And then on Monday night, we got Rams and Vikings playing in the middle of a wildfire, which is crazy.
Isn't Sunday night Bucks Commanders?
Did I flip them?
I think Eagles Packers is the 4 o'clock
one. Well, then 4:30. I screwed up.
4:30,
so we could know by 8 o'clock who the Lions play. And so just to set the table for the people, the Lions will play the lowest seed, the NFL reseeds. Green Bay is the 7th seed. If they win, that's a lock. They're locked in if they can beat the Eagles. If not, then it moves on to the Commanders. The Commanders can knock off the Bucks. The Lions would play the Commanders if Eagles and Commanders win. And if both the Eagles and the Bucks win, the winner of Monday night will come here. So it'll be either the Vikings or the Rams. Lots of interesting opportunities, lots of interesting opponents. Three the Lions have played, one they have not. You guys have any preference on who you would like to see?
Well, from a Lions perspective, if we play the easier route, although they haven't played them yet, it would be the Washington Commanders for me. And I know Green Bay's a little banged up and the uncertainty of never defending a rookie quarterback, but he is a rookie quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, McLaurin's really good. They have some good elements to their team, but they've been really blessed with a weird Hail Mary, some other crazy things. I think the Lions would have, I'm not going to say blow them out, but I think they'd have no problem with the Commanders. So that would be choice number one. And if it's who I don't want to see, it's the Vikings.
Same.
I mean, I think those little passes that were wide open at Darnold and screwed up on Sunday, he would not screw up next week.
No, and I'm not a coach at all, but it felt like during that game, Kevin O'Connell, I have a lot of respect for it, didn't make a lot of adjustments. But I thought that was an interesting choice. The way the Lions were bringing the pressure, but there's no way that works again.
Yeah.
Right?
That's
a very hard game plan to run back in the span of 3 weeks and expect similar results.
Right. But I'm with Sony. I think the Commanders are your best shot. And the Lions have just, which I mean, I can't believe I'm going to say this out loud, they have just owned the Packers. And so I would gladly take either one of those two, which I mean, look at me being all bold with the top or the bottom two seeds.
Go on to the list. they say all the time, right? Like it's very difficult to win three straight against a singular opponent in the NFL. We've heard that a bunch. I think the Vikings present the stiffest challenge, despite what we just saw on Sunday night, because their coaching is phenomenal. Mm. I understand they got outcoached ultimately on Sunday night, but Kevin O'Connell is a very good offensive coach. Brian Flores is a very good defensive coach. He gave Ben Johnson fits to start that one. They were doing some really interesting stuff where they were checking the Lions' checks, and the Lions were like, oh, shit.
From like man to zone to cloud to blitz. I mean, it was everything at once before the play was even transpiring.
And a few different players talked about it in the locker room. A couple didn't want to be on record about it, but you know, Sewell went on record about it and said, like, it really screwed us up for a while, and we had to come into the locker room and reset some things. And Ben Johnson obviously you know, figured the puzzle out in time. They had a really successful second half and won that game. Offensively, you said it. Darnold's, you know, the moment was too big for him on Sunday. I think if he can settle down, play well on the road against the Rams and win that game, that'll give him a lot of confidence. He would play much more confidently in a second opportunity to play against Detroit. And so, you know, you're not going to shut Justin Jefferson down a second time. You might contain him, but
you tell Amik Robertson that.
I will, and maybe that will be enough, right?
Maybe not Addison this time. Maybe not Hockenson this time, right? Like, I mean, it was a total blanket. And back to what you guys were talking about with the rookie quarterback, like, you know, Jayden Daniels has been a lot of fun, but like, and the Ford Field crowd will eat him alive. Mm-hmm. It'll eat him alive. He's never seen this or heard this before. I mean, and I saw a post about it. Like, all the Lions do at home, every commercial break is they try out Barry Sanders, crowd goes nuts. They try out Calvin Johnson, crowd goes nuts. They play Eminem, show Eminem in a suite, crowd goes nuts. It's like, I think it was Albert Breer. He's like, nobody's winning in that building.
Yeah.
Corgi races at halftime.
I mean, I was in the corgi races. I got to tell you, that was a lot of fun.
The best.
It was a lot of fun. I loved it.
Yeah, I think more than Jayden Daniels, I don't buy Washington's defense. You know, it was the worst in the NFL last year. They've certainly got better this year. Bobby Wagner has been a really, really nice addition. Dan Quinn's got them playing at a higher level. A higher level is 20th best in the NFL, maybe one of the worst defenses in the playoffs. I think Ben Johnson eats that alive. And so I can see Washington scoring 20, 24, 27 points, but Detroit might score 40 on a Washington team.
Yes, I will echo Jay Raj. In particular, they don't stop the run. I was just looking up some of these numbers for the specifics, but almost 5 yards a carry. It's the third worst run defense in yards allowed per game. And if you can't stop the Lions from running the ball, oh, by the way, with likely David Montgomery back on the field 2 weeks from now, you don't stop their offense, period. It's the only way you have a chance against them is to eliminate the threat of the play action for Jared Goff. And if you can't contain the run, they'll score 30, 40. Heck, they might score 50 on you. I think just looking at some surface numbers, that's a matchup that favors the Lions the most, because ultimately they're going to go as far as their offense carries them. Yeah, the defense had a tremendous performance in Week 18, but I think we all agree this team's ceiling will be defined by how much it can score over the next month, because they're going to have to outscore teams, and I think they could do that. I won't say with ease, but I would feel pretty good about their chances of putting up 30 plus against Washington. And it sure does sound like Demo's going to be back on the field in 2 weeks. Dan Campbell made that expectation rather clear on Tuesday. And man, what a boost that would be. I mean, you're getting a guy back who, while he's coming off an injury, would have, you know, 4 to 5 weeks that he would have been rested since his injury. Those are some fresh legs to combine with Jahmyr Gibbs. Yeah, I think the Commanders matchup is one the Lions would find most would be the most number of matchups they could exploit if they find Washington here in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I know we don't want to see it for the obvious subplots, but what are your thoughts football wise if it's the Rams? You know, look, they gave the Lions fits. The Lions, they gave them fits in the playoffs last year. They gave them fits in the opening game this year with, you know, going into overtime. We know how good their receivers are. They're running the ball up there with Kyron Williams. You know, look, they don't have Aaron Donald compared to last year, but Jared Verse has been a really good rookie. They're young cornerbacks. I think, unless there's turnovers, the Lions should beat them, but that would be a high-scoring game too because Stafford and Nacua and Kupp, they can take advantage of the Lions secondary.
Single best reason to not work at the Detroit News is I don't have to listen to Kelly Stafford's podcast. Don't have to do it. Nobody has to monitor it. It's not my problem.
You don't have to work. You don't have to help me, Hank. Good God.
Here's what I have a hard time with the Rams, right? They go out and they put 44 on Buffalo and look unstoppable offensively. Yeah. Look at every game around that. 20 points against the Eagles, 21 against the Saints, 12 against 49ers, 19 against the Jets, 13 against the Cardinals. It's not.
No, it's not. It's a misconception because of the personnel.
Yeah, you could be right. Because their offensive line is not very good.
Well, it's just they've struggled to do anything consistently. They're winning games because they're well coached and find ways to win, and they've got that same kind of vibe that the 2022 Lions did, right? Like they just are finding ways to get it done. But that's another one where I don't want to see it because it's redundant and boring, and I don't need to cover that third time in 12 months. But That opponent does not concern me at the same level as some of the others.
No, it's ABM. It's anyone to Minnesota for this round.
Well, so on that note, then let me ask a question. If it's anybody but Minnesota, and nobody wants to see the Rams again, because I'm with you on that one, unless I can boo Kelly Stafford's children. is any one of the other two games
great? Now we're on the list.
We're on the top of the list. She and I can. Anyway, I'm not afraid of her.
Can write off Tempur-Pedic beds and whatever the make your own will website off of our sponsor possibilities. They're out.
And veneers. But the other two games, is there any one of those two that stands out that would avoid Mr. Tempur-Pedic or the Vikings? Because otherwise, I mean, if chalk holds, you're getting one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And yeah.
I think the Commanders have a very realistic shot of beating the Buccaneers. Baker's a gamer. That's a given. But it's not a particularly strong team. It's not quite a coin flip, but maybe 60-40 bucks for me.
Yeah, the spread's three, which is suggesting that they're evenly matched teams on a neutral field. So I think that really, really could go either way. Just one more note on the Rams. Not only have they not scored consistently, they're not an explosive offense at all. I know you look at those receivers, Nacua especially, and assume with Stafford, the downfield gunslinger, and Kyron Williams, the good young running back, that they're just hitting 20 and 30 yarders all day. They are not. Their offense is kind of a grind. And so I don't think they present all that much to fear. Now, of course, it's hard to beat a coach like Fay three times in a span of what would be essentially a season if you go back to last year's playoff game. But I don't think they would intimidate the Lions from an offensive perspective.
Does anybody intimidate the Lions?
No.
Honestly, I mean, I don't think they care.
And I don't think the Packers are going to go into Philly and they might give them a scare early and then the sphincters could get real tight in the link. But I don't know. Without Christian Watson, the Packers have not been playing really good football. I mean, the fact that they're probably – I don't know the exact stats, but they have to be the only team in football history to go 1-5 in their division and make the playoffs.
Yeah, we were talking about this last weekend. Did we ever get an answer on this? I need to know.
No. What's our research department say?
Yeah. Let's ask you.
We need an intern.
The Packers, what they remind me of is when everybody would say, oh, Matthew Stafford's okay, but he can't beat a good team, right? Like that was the narrative with him here is like the Packers are okay. And they can't beat a good team. That's kind of been their reality this year. They've lost almost every meaningful high level game. And unless Jalen Hurts doesn't play, which he's playing.
Yes.
I don't think they have a shot. I think we're barreling toward a Lions-Eagles conference championship, and it should be a pretty epic game.
Because everyone wants to know. I have the answer. Yes. They are the third team ever to go 1-5 in their division and make the playoffs. And the first since 2024. The Packers made the playoffs last year after going 1-5.
They did it last year too? Wow.
And the Steelers in 1989 are also part of that ignominious group.
Oh, man, and that Packers team made some noise in the playoffs. They should have probably knocked off the 49ers.
Probably should have come here for the conference championship.
Wouldn't that have been something?
Yeah. What do we get, guys?
You
get another episode.
No, I mean, who do the Lions, before we leave, who do the Lions get?
Oh, next week they're getting the Vikings.
Tony's just resigned.
I know.
Anybody but miss them, that's who they're playing.
And I just want video of their wives being harassed this time.
Tony just wants to go watch more Supersonics highlights.
What'd you say?
You just want to go watch more Supersonics highlights.
Yeah, exactly.
I think they get Washington. I think Washington goes into Tampa and finds a way to win a turnover-filled game. I think we're going to see, I don't know, 4 to 5 turnovers in that game, and there'll be a couple in the fourth quarter, and I think the Commanders come out on the cleaner end of a dirty sort of game, and Jaden Daniels gets a chance to come here and show himself against the top seed in the NFC.
Oh, and of course that big rematch between former Lion great Zach Ertz.
Yes, correct.
Look, if we want to play the script angle, what is the best script? I think Washington coming here is compelling. Mm-hmm. You know, that is the young upstart future, the NFC quarterback versus a team that's trying to erase its long history of, you know, not playing a Super Bowl. Compelling TV. And then it's, like I said, it's the Eagles and the NFC Championship. Like that's the best possible games for the NFL. Certainly not saying anybody's officiating it a certain way to make it happen, but if we're going to get the best football, I think that's the most entertaining path.
Sign me up.
Yeah, the officials only get involved when it's the Chiefs, everybody says, right?
I'm not part of this group. Not part of it.
Me neither.
Declined comment.
All right. We got anything else going on? Anything I'm forgetting?
Yeah, I got a question for you.
I was
tossing this around in my head today, and I think we're going to do a little segment on it on our Fox 2 bye week pregame show. Apparently that exists. I thought we were going to have a bye. There is no game, but we still have a show, an hour to fill from 10
no
to 11.
No time off for us,
Sunday
man.
Morning, tune in. And I think one of the segments is going to be like who's the X factor for the Lions in this playoff run? And you know, like your Jared Goff, Amon Ross, St. Brown players aside, who is maybe an unheralded or lesser talked about player who could play a big role in how far this team goes over the next month on either side of the ball?
I mean, does Jameson Williams count?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, offensively, he's clearly, there's been multiple games this year where he's been the spark plug or the centerpiece of the offensive game plan quietly. He's a game changer. It just needs to touch the ball twice and you just never know what's going to happen. On the other side of the ball, I thought he'd have a bigger role last Sunday. I think they need to tweak his usage a little bit to maximize what he can bring, but I still think Melifonwu is an X factor. I mean, he can do a lot of different things, and within that, he frees up Branch to do a little bit more of what he's best at. I didn't think they quite, I know they only allowed 9 points, so hard for me to say, but Melifonwu didn't blitz a single time against the Vikings. I thought that was strange. Branch is at his best when he's doing that kind of rat in the hole robber role where he can kind of ad lib and free range and snatch, you know, errant throws and didn't do a whole lot of that. So I think Melifonwu has the chance to become an X factor.
I was convinced you were going to say Broderick Martin.
Broderick Martin. Somebody's got to take Pat O'Connor snaps. Who's it going to be?
Well, I was going to say Zadarius because he finally showed up basically on Sunday. And if they are going to make what we expected is a long run, I don't care how many times Aaron Glenn, you know, doctors up those blitz calls, and if he comes and this guy comes, if they can't get near a quarterback, they're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say Amik, but like I think at this point, that's not, you know, he's been so good the last couple of weeks. There's been so much talk about him, and I got to tell you
that I think that fits though.
I mean, look, his ability to the way he locked down Justin Jefferson. Can he do it again? I don't know. He'll tell you he can.
Yeah, he will. Twice on Sunday.
His quote about you can't bury what comes from the dirt. Like, I mean, put it on my tombstone. Put it on my tombstone. Yeah. One of the best things I've ever heard. And then, you know,
it's also the appropriate spot to be buried in dirt, by the way.
I mean, yes. Well, no, you can't because you're from the dirt.
Yeah. I'm actually not dead.
it's just the Amik Robertson version of the Bible. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust, dirt to dirt.
And then, you know, offensively, I love the safety blanket that Sam Laporta can be.
Yeah.
On long.
He's playing really well right now, by the way.
Yeah. And he's always just right there when you need somebody. And you know who else I think that fits? You're not going to see it a ton in the statue, which I know is a lame thing to say, but the way Tim Patrick has been playing the last few weeks, I mean, if he can, you know, one catch on a 2-point conversion, mm-hmm. a couple of blocks here and there, those things in a tight playoff game make all the difference. And so I look at those two guys offensively.
Yeah, you took mine on offense and Tim Patrick. You talk about safety blankets, especially on third down, fourth down, red zone. He's a guy that Jared Goff has built more and more trust in. You know, he's one of those players that Jared Goff describes as a friendly receiver in the way that he can come back to the ball when plays break down. He has a way of getting open. He really knows how to navigate the field against zone coverage. I feel like J-Rod, you and I have talked about this a little bit.
No doubt.
He's got a keen feel for space that probably only comes with being an NFL veteran and having seen so much over his career. And it feels like, much like Josh Reynolds came through with a big touchdown catch in the red zone against the Bucs, I believe, in last year's playoff run, they're going to need like a red zone touchdown somewhere along the line, maybe a couple and more than a couple third down, fourth down catches from Tim Patrick to get to where they want to go. And then on defense, I know he's a household name and he's been an NFL staple for almost a decade, but DJ Reader is now a focal point of this defense. And as you mentioned, J-Rods, they do lose Pat O'Connor, who was doing a lot of that yeoman's work inside, a little bit of, he'd taken on something of a John Kaminsky identity on this year's team, the uncelebrated dirty worker in the trenches. And even more weight now is on Reader's shoulders, obviously in the wake of the McNeil injury too. And I thought he played well on Sunday. He swallowed the run a couple times, and he is still a guy who can get after the passer from the interior. And I think if they can find, you know, a few extra quarterback pressures per game from the middle of that defense, certainly from Reader and then also from Onzerike, that goes a long way in helping them make up for all the losses up front. So Patrick and Reader and Onzerike, a bronze medal, are my three.
Levi played so great against
Minnesota. Played awesome.
I mean, it just didn't really get the attention. I thought it was one of his best games of professional. Impacted the pocket regularly, but not just that, on critical downs. Yeah. And didn't get a sack. He got a few QB hits, but like really, really a force multiplier in that game. We left you Tom Kennedy. I thought that's where you were going to go.
Well, I'm going to go close to Tom Kennedy, and that's going to be, although he might not play.
Maurice Alexander?
No, although he might not play. Jack Fox, if he can punt like he's been punting and it at home, if you pin whoever they're playing deep in their own territory with that freaking crowd going crazy, that is going to be huge.
Mm-hmm. And again, sorry, he
may not punt.
Greatest punter of all time, Jack Fox, according to Hogan Hatton and Jake Bates.
Oh, there you go. Case closed.
Set the NFL record for net punting averages here. So, just another weapon in the Lions' back pocket.
And as a quarterback on potential fake punts, don't forget it.
Never forget it.
Let's add Khalif Raymond into the special teams.
Full roster.
Yeah. Everyone's an X factor, all 53. We're done here.
And obviously, if it's the Rams or Vikings, they will be playing Sunday, not Saturday.
I think that's probably right.
Yeah,
probably Saturday the other way around, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I would think so. So
either way, probably a prime time, probably a 3:30 in the morning podcast, because that's what we do.
Well, enjoy the weekend, everyone. I'm going to be scouting the NFC Championship team. I don't know if I'm going to the game, but I will be in Philly visiting my mom.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah, you should take her. That's a nice, safe environment for you guys to go hang out in for a few hours.
Yeah. I thought he was saying he was scouting Instagram for NASA photos, but
no, that would be nice.
Just looking for more Bobby Clark fights.
Yeah.
This episode, as always, will be produced by Zach Clark. So he's doing double duty here today. Fantastic, fantastic work. You'll be able to listen to us on the Odyssey app, Spotify, Apple Music, some of the other podcast places. You know, rate, download, listen. You guys have been great at that. I don't know if you need to do it more, but we appreciate all of it.
Birchie's got the re-signing of Casey Mize's podcast coming up shortly.
Fantastic.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, him and Jake Rogers, they
breaking news.
Agreed on arbitration figures.
I know, I saw that. I'm doing a podcast on that.
Yeah, we're going to do a bonus episode right now.
For more free work? I'm doing enough as it is.
You and Caputo, so it's really work.
Yeah. Perfect. You'll be able to read Birchie's Casey Mize column and listen to his podcast on 971theticket.com. You can find my work, which continues daily here on the Troy Football Network at troyfootball.net. All right, getting ready for the list. For Zach Clark, Stoney, Will Birchfield, and myself, Justin Rogers, thank you for listening.
Peace.